877-217-5757, your number, and we switch gears, and we have two local luminaries on hand, both from the Center for Planning Excellence, Camille Manning Broom and Jessa McKelvey Kemp, and they are involved in one of the major endeavors each year in Baton Rouge, and we are in the COVID age, and so we have to make adjustments, but the Smart Growth Summit is going on with some tweaking, and Camille, let's begin with you. What's happening in this year's Smart Growth Summit?
Great. Thanks so much, Jim, for having us. We're really excited to bring the caliber of speakers that we've lined up to our virtual platform this year. And registration is free. Everyone can go to summit.cpex.org. And next week, we kick off Climate Week of the Smart Growth Summit. We are bringing in the international lead author of the International Panel on Climate Change's fifth assessment report, as well as the Oceans and Cryospheres report that was just released this year.
Who are those people?
Dr. Michael Oppenheimer, and he will be our keynote address on October 20th.
October 20th, as in a week from Tuesday.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
And he's a big name in that field. And in our final segment, we're going to talk more about climate change. But the summit has taken various twists and turns through the years, accenting different parts of what makes a great city. Mm-hmm. And we're all affected by climate change, and in this area more so than in most any area in the country.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Jessica, you've been involved with this for a few years. Your thoughts about where the virtual summit is going. How do people participate in something like this?
Well, most of us have had more than our share of Zoom meetings, but the good thing about that is everyone is comfortable with the platform. It's easy to log on and participate, and so we, like Camille said, you can go to summit.cpex.org and register. You'll receive a Zoom link. Just hop on, and you can ask questions, listen to the speakers. So it's, you know, we wish we could have everyone in person, but especially at this moment, having these conversations about climate change, equity, public health, and how we're designing our communities for the future is critical. So we're very glad to be able to bring everyone together virtually.
And the official start date is?
We started 2 weeks ago, and so there we've had two sessions thus far. We have around 800 registrants, and each session's brought in.
Can you bring in more?
Yeah, we're hoping to bring in more. That's why we're here to talk to you and your guests today.
All right, so but how do you get in if you want to participate with the remaining sessions? You say you had two. Yeah. You got many, many more to go,
you
right?
Just register. Go to summit.cpex.org, register.
Well, now, don't go so fast.
summit.cpex.org.
Okay, summit.cpex.org, and you can register and find out everybody who's going to be there.
That's right.
And you've got how many speakers?
About a dozen left.
Yeah.
And so, but I really encourage everyone in Louisiana who cares about Louisiana and our future to tune in next week, which is Climate Week, where on October 20th, you'll hear from the world's leading scientist on climate change. He's writing a specific address to Louisiana residents, to Louisiana people. And then on October 22nd, we have a session that's going to focus on the triangulation between climate change, public health, equity, mm-hmm. and economy. We have the leading global economist on energy economics to talk about what's happening globally within the energy sphere.
An important summit, as it is every year. How many years is this now?
15
years. Started in 2006, and here we are in 2020, the 15th annual CPEX Smart Growth Summit. We'll talk some more with Camille Manning Broom and Jessa McKelvey Kemp when we return after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. In our final segment, a few more minutes with Camille Manning Broom and Jessica Kemp. They are with the Smart Growth Summit. The Center for Planning Excellence is the party that is responsible for this fine summit every year, and it starts, it's already started, but next week is the big week of focusing upon climate change. And Camille, as far as the importance of this issue, it is a existential issue in Louisiana, Unfortunately, many members of our delegation are not on accord when these bills come up in Congress. How do we appeal to lawmakers to take this seriously?
Right now, we are at a critical moment where we have two different trajectories. And on one trajectory, we can be smart, we can follow science, we can put divisive politics aside and just focus on approaches and adaptation and mitigation solutions, which is where I feel like our governor has been, and we're very excited to partner on a number of initiatives with the state. But, you know, it's a transformational time. COVID-19 has highlighted the vulnerability of our ecosystem, the vulnerability of our environment and of our people. And so we've got to make some hard decisions, but, you know, the time is now to do that, or Louisiana's future looks pretty grim if we don't get serious about this.
And Jessica, in previous years, these summits have featured sessions on traffic and transportation and neighborhoods, but no matter where you live or how you get around, everybody is affected by what's going on with the environment, and climate change is a reality whether we want to acknowledge it or not.
That's right. And like Camille said, we need to be willing to do things differently. And we do have an opportunity to be proactive, to adapt our transportation systems and our neighborhood design and our city design to be not just mitigate climate change impacts and adapt to the changes that are already taking place, but to create new opportunities and new industries and new expertise. This is, I think there's a lot of fear around climate change, but it's also a moment of great opportunity. And if we are proactive, we can seize those opportunities and Louisiana can prosper. If we are reactive, we're going to be playing defense and catch up. And I fear for what that would look like.
Well, the place to go if you'd like to participate is summit.cpex.org. And we always thank Camille Manning-Broom, the CEO of CPEX, and the Vice President, Jessica McKelvey Kemp. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
Be safe, and we'll be in touch and have a great summit. We're joined now by a gentleman who's also intricately involved in the environment, Howard Frumkin. He is Emeritus Professor of Environmental and Occupational Health Sciences at the University of Washington School of Public Health, where he was the dean for 6 years. Mark Emmert was the president of the University of Washington for many of those years, former LSU chancellor. His book is Planetary Health, Protecting Nature to Protect Ourselves. He has collaborated with Samuel Myers on this book. And hello to you, Howard Frumkin.
Hello, Jim. Very nice to be with you.
Nice to talk with you, Dr. Frumkin. And you believe the stakes in 3 weeks for the planet are extreme. Why is this, I talked about it being an existential issue, but you believe it involves a choice that could affect generations to come. Why so?
Boy, Jim, this conversation couldn't be more continuous with the one you just had with Camille and Jessica. I think we're talking about many of the same stressors on our planet. The book that Sam and I just did is about planetary health. And the core idea there is very continuous with what you were just talking about. The core idea is that we have disrupted so many systems in our planet in the course of growing our big human population and growing our commerce and growing our activities, that those disrupted planetary systems are now accounting for a bigger and bigger part of human suffering. So it's not just the hurricanes, as you know well, from the Louisiana coast, but it's the wildfires we've had. It's the spread of infectious diseases. We're losing entire species that we need for services like pollination. And if you take those all together as a bundle of changes, they're dangerous for people's health and well-being. So the notion is that we ought to put human health and well-being at the center of what we do, and we'll probably get it right. We'll probably end up protecting and stewarding our planet and at the same time optimizing our health and well-being.
But time is of the essence.
It really is. We've gotten to a point now where we're close to tipping points, where some planetary systems can flip into a state of irreversible change, and that would be a very ugly future. So time is of the essence.
Now, you completed your book, Dr. Frumkin, before this pandemic, but you say COVID-19 is a planetary health story. How so?
Well, we want to switch from the urban planning issues you were just talking about to another big topic, which is food systems. And accompanying food systems is the question of land use. So what we've done as a human species is repurposed much of the land surface on the planet away from forests and grasslands, their natural state, toward crops, growing food. Some of that is grazing land for livestock. Much of it is cropland to grow the crops that we use to feed not only ourselves, but to feed our livestock. And those land use changes and food system changes together have big implications. One implication is that they bring humans into closer and closer contact with wildlife. Another implication is that as we eat more livestock, we've industrialized the production of livestock. So much of our livestock is now grown in concentrated feed operations in the industrial scale growth of livestock. Both of those things, the contact with wildlife and the industrial production of livestock, are perfect setups for humans to come into contact with animal pathogens. And that puts us at risk of what's called spillover, where the pathogen jumps from animals into human populations. Compound that with the globalization of our economy, the fact that anybody can jump on a plane and be halfway across the world later that day. It's a perfect setup. If you were a virus or a bacteria, a perfect strategy for spreading around the world and infecting lots of people.
Well, population, as you state, has obvious impacts on planetary health, yet given the conflation of any population-related policy with so-called population control, how do we discuss environmental impacts in a scientific way without getting passion and even religious views involved?
Well, it's a great question, and you're absolutely right that population is a hot-button issue. I guess I'd say two things about that question. It's an extremely important question. One thing is that population is only one side of the story. The other side is consumption. So it matters how many of us there are walking the face of the earth. It also matters how each of us consumes resources, goods and energy. An American, one of us, you and I and everybody listening to the program, consumes about 50 or 70 times the amount of resources that one person in Malawi or in Guatemala consumes. So we need to be thinking about both things, the amount we consume and the number of us. When it comes to how many of us there are, there is a really good set of strategies that brings down birth rates. It's not coercive. It's not religiously offensive. Almost everybody can accept it. And that strategy is educating girls and empowering women. In country after country where the education of girls has taken hold and where women have become empowered, the birth rates come down. And so I think that's probably our best approach to dealing with the question of population.
The book is Planetary Health, from Howard Frumkin and Samuel Myers. Professor Frumkin states that 140,000 new chemicals and pesticides have been manufactured and introduced into commercial products since the 1950s, and the majority have never been tested for safety. What does that mean?
Well, we've introduced something brand new to nature, a lot of molecules that never existed, and we designed them, manufactured them, and used them in ways that were functionally oriented. That is, we wanted the molecule to resist heat or resist breakdown or resist acids, whatever we needed it to do, all of the plastics, things that make our lives better. But we often didn't test them to see whether they would be safe and healthy for us or safe and healthy for the environment.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we need now is a new approach to chemicals, not to bash them at all, but let's design our chemicals. Let's get our chemical engineers working with us to design chemicals that do the jobs we need them to do, but at the same time, don't hang around indefinitely in the environment, don't poison people and animals, and don't bioconcentrate as they move up the food web so they reach awfully high concentrations in the upper-level predators. That's a field called green chemistry. It's a very promising and exciting field. and it will help us, as we manufacture chemicals, do so in a sustainable way.
We only have about 30 seconds, but what about global dietary transition? Can you give us the Cliff Notes version of this thought?
Well, the bottom line is that we need to produce healthy food in sustainable ways so that a big population on the globe can eat. And that's probably going to mean closer to home production. It's probably going to mean eating a little less meat and more plants, and doing that all with fewer inputs, less fertilizer and pesticides, which is good for the farmers because it cuts their costs.
The book is Planetary Health, Protecting Nature to Protect Ourselves, from Howard Frumkin and Samuel Myers. Thank you, Dr. Frumkin. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Jim.
First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan provide signature support for Talk Louisiana. Back tomorrow, same time, same place. Stay safe and stay tuned.